You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This time of year, a festive bowl of punch or a rich eggnog are a featured part of many holiday parties. With me now to tell us about the history of punches and nogs and to give us tips on how to make delicious holiday drinks is mixicologist and cocktail historian David Wondrich. He is the author of a book called Imbibe, with an exclamation point, so he's really insisting on it. And more recently, he wrote an article about punch called With Glasses Raised for the December issue of Saveur magazine. I'm very pleased to welcome him to the show. And by the way, we would like to hear from listeners on the subject. You can tell us about your favorite holiday punch, nog, or cocktail by leaving a comment on our show page at WNYC.org or by giving us a call at 212-433-9692. Hi, David. How are you?
Great, Leonard. Thanks. Very nice to be here, especially at this time of year.
Is there a specific definition of punch?
Well, punch is one of those things like a martini or a cocktail that started off as something very specific, and then over the years people got their hands into it, and it ended up meaning pretty much anything in a bowl.
And how do you differentiate it from any other kind of alcoholic drink, a martini or...
Well, these days it's basically alcoholic drink in a large scale, but I'm kind of interested in going back to the original ones when punch actually meant one thing and not another thing, when it was a special kind of drink. And I think that's always the fun part of history of drinks or history of anything, is getting to the origins of things and seeing how they develop.
So what is the origin of punch?
Like all history of alcohol,
and where's Judy?
We sort of don't know. Yeah. Judy, well, if she had too much punch, she's sleeping in the stable somewhere and has no idea how she got there. But originally, punch comes from, as far as we could tell, English sailors who, under Queen Elizabeth, were out in India and either took one of their native English drinks and made it with local ingredients, or took an Indian drink and adapted it to their taste, or something happened. But it seems to have come out of the English East India trade.
And I associate it with the tropics for some reason. Planters punch, for example, even though we drink them during the holidays,
right,
usually, in other parts of the world, they're drunk year-round.
Well, it's a
they?
Staple beverage. Originally, punch just meant liquor with sugar, citrus, and water. And, you know, that's the first popular mixed drink with liquor. And in some parts of the world, it's still the staple drink of the people, because there's really nothing better.
And also, a way to differentiate it from other mixed drinks is that it's made in a large quantity, usually, instead of glass by glass.
Well, the English sailors were a social bunch, and they liked to put it in bowls and pass it around and drink it out of the bowl until they invented the punch ladle. I thought I would actually make some punch while we talk.
Please, please.
This is an arak punch, which goes back to the earliest days of punch. And it's made with this Indonesian Batavia Arak van Oosten, which goes back to the Dutch East India Company. And
what is arak?
Arak in Arabic means liquor of any kind. And so all over, everywhere from the Middle East to the Philippines, it can mean anything. But this particular one is a very aromatic type of rum. You can probably smell it already.
So it's like a rum.
Yeah, but it's fermented with little bits of red rice that add this particular funk to it that is unique. So I'm going to start with...
But it is interesting that it's from Indonesia, which is a Muslim country, and you can't drink alcoholic beverages.
Exactly.
In
So it's distilled there, but it's aged and blended in Holland, because Indonesia used to be a Dutch colony. So this is one of the oldest pieces of trade still going in the world, is the Batavia Arak trade. It's fascinating that it continues.
And I should describe to you that you have a glass bowl here with a huge piece of ice, and you poured the liquid over the top of the ice to instantly chill it?
To chill it a little bit, yeah. And then I'm adding rum to add a little body. The arak is very, very aromatic, but it's a little thin, and so the rum adds a little bit of richness. So this is a recipe from the 1830s, but it probably goes back a lot earlier than that. I just have to get one component.
Okay, well,
here,
while you're getting it, I'm going to ask you, go ahead. I mentioned that you have a huge chunk of ice. It looks like it was probably made with some kind of a plastic container.
Exactly.
Takeout plastic container. Would ice cubes not be a good idea?
Well, ice cubes, unless you have so many of them that they reach a critical mass, they tend to melt immediately, and then your punch is watery. Something like this will last for a good long time. It'll last for a couple hours, and especially if it's bigger than this. This is a small bowl of punch, but if you make a big one, you can use a – see, there was the bowl there. Ringing, but you can use a 2 gallon or a gallon jug and freeze that, and that'll just bob in there and keep it cool without diluting it too much for a long time.
Now, you said this is an alcoholic drink, and yet we have any number of punches that are available, especially commercially, that have no alcohol in them, including a whole brand Hawaiian Punch. We have Nogs, which I assume also are supposed to be alcoholic, and then you can go to the dairy case. A local grocery store, and there is this container of something that's called eggnog,
yeah, which is mostly carrageenan. I think if you read the ingredients, it's a little frightening. Eggnog was a real American specialty, and that goes back to the early colonial days, and it's a thing of beauty. But like anything, once it gets commercialized and homogenized. It starts to lose some of its delightfulness, but
That's ours.
This is ours to drink right now.
No, but I meant the nog.
Oh, the nog is ours. Yes,
and punch. People do put rum in the supermarket stuff, which is really just a dairy product.
Yeah, originally it was made with rum, or if you were on the frontier, it was made with whiskey here in America. And but the rum was the New England tipple of choice in that part of the country, and there's an old rum trade involved with that.
Are both of these really ways of drinking a lot of alcohol without it tasting like it's alcoholic?
Well, back in the 18th century, the alcohols were pretty rough and ready, so it was a way of disguising it. It also gave you something that would keep, because wine did not preserve very well, and beer preserved terribly. So the distilled spirits that you used, that was something you could keep on a shelf or keep in a barrel. And if you kept it in a barrel, it kept getting better. And you'd mix it with sugar. Lemons preserve fairly well for fruit, or you could just leave the lemons out, frankly. Nobody was going to call off a party if they didn't have any lemons. But there were practical considerations involved. It wasn't just gastronomical.
And now they're popular all over the world, punches? I don't think nogs are popular anywhere but in the United States.
I think you're right about that. Their egg drinks in general have a constituency in the northern parts of the world because you want something that sticks to your ribs.
Is it really egg? Because an egg cream doesn't have an egg in it.
No. An eggnog definitely has an egg. The earliest way you would make it is you would take a whole egg and shake it up with rum or bourbon or brandy and some milk, and then grate nutmeg on it, and you were done. It was pretty simple.
In the case of a punch like this, is there a classic number of ingredients that go in?
Well, originally the name, one of the main theories about the name says punch is from the Hindustani word panch, which means five, and it was a five-ingredient drink. You had spirits of any kind. You had water to smooth out the spirits. You had citrus juice to add some interest there. You had sugar to balance the acidity of the citrus. And then you had spice to kind of wrap everything together and transform the flavor.
Isn't it a kind of a dangerous drink? It tastes like, it doesn't taste all that alcoholic, yeah. And then you have two of them and you find yourself walking on your knees.
Well, in the 18th century when it was in its heyday, it was essentially the liquid crack of the upper class, just like gin was the liquid crack of the lower class. There are all these stories, engravings, William Hogarth etchings about punch parties, and they look pretty riotous, to say the least.
So it was an upper class drink?
Everything in it was imported, so except for the water. So everything had to come from other parts of the world. Nothing in it originally was English. So it was imported. But, that lethality is one thing. It's still retained, and you do have to watch out for it. But it's very festive, though.
Now, for people who don't drink, and there are a fair number, and there are people who shouldn't drink, or for one reason or another.
Exactly so.
Are there still good punches that can be made?
Oh, you can make lovely, simple citrus punches. I think the secret is many people, when they're making punch, throw everything but the kitchen sink in it, and that's too much. You want to use simple ingredients, and you want to let their flavor come through. So if you use fresh citrus juice, squeeze it yourself, and use, say, raw sugar and turn that into a syrup, you'll get some rum flavor out of that without it being alcoholic at all, and it will give you a very superior lemonade-type thing.
William,
sparkling water,
so,
and you're done.
So lemonade is kind of a variant on punch.
Well, it's a basis. It's the punch basis. you start with that, and then you add alcohol to it.
You can give us a call at 212-433-9692 if you want to speak to David Wondrich or to talk about some kind of a festive drink, alcoholic or non-alcoholic, that you prepared during the holiday season. David Wondrich's article with Glasses Raised was in the December issue of Saveur magazine. You get a lot of feedback to an article like that?
Well, with magazines, it's, the modern world, we're so used to things online where you put something up on a blog and immediately you get comments. With magazines, the feedback comes, it takes a little bit of time and it kind of filters in, and you run into somebody and say, oh, I read your article, and then somebody else at the party says, oh, I read that, that's you, et cetera. And then you get feedback a little more slowly, the old-fashioned way, which is kind of fun.
How did you become interested in punches? Because your book, Imbibe, was really more about cocktails, wasn't it?
Well, this is the this is the prehistory of the cocktail, basically. And originally, I tried to do it all in one book, and I had a huge section on punches that my editor was smart enough to say, you know, Dave, this really doesn't fit. And she was right, because everything in it was English and going back to England, and my book was about American drinks.
So, and where do you find recipes? They didn't have punch cookbooks, did they?
Well, the first cocktail book, I have a reproduction of it here. Jerry Thomas's Bartender Guide has 80 punch recipes that he had nothing to do with. His editors put them in there. And
when does that go back?
And this goes back to 1862, and the punch recipes were collected by the editors from earlier books, and there were punch books. It was a popular beverage up until about 1860, something like that.
And if you were to just follow those recipes exactly, would it be interesting, or do you have to adjust because things have changed over the years?
Some of the ingredients have changed, and you have to be careful. And also, some of the recipes call for enormous amounts of punch. You know, this is like making punch for your British country house, all the servants and neighbors, you know, 10 gallons of punch. That's a little much. So you have to adapt it like that.
But I'd imagine also there were things in them that don't even exist anymore.
Well, one of them is, for instance, ambergris, which is clotted whale cholesterol used in perfumes now and not sold.
I thought it was whale vomit, actually.
Well, I think it's like, yeah, it's some piece of whale vomit.
Yeah, I really don't want whale vomit in my
No,
in my
well, they would only put a couple grains in it, you know, but ingredients like that are very hard to find, let's say.
It's bad enough that thinking about that, then I'm resisting making some joke about Punch Sulzberger. So, whale vomit, punch, well. Mm.
The Times has certainly been writing about punch lately. So
have they? Oh, have they?
Yeah, they just did an article on it.
We, as I said, we will be taking calls in a little while. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write to us. Leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. So it's my sense that we don't need much equipment to really make a good punch. You just need a big bowl.
You need a big bowl.
A big block of ice.
Some measuring stuff. I brought one of my prized possessions, an 18th century punch ladle here.
It's very pretty.
There used to be, you know, it's got a whalebone handle, speaking of whales, and a silver stem with a little bowl with a shilling set in the bottom, a Charles II shilling, and that was for luck, so you would always be drinking out of money, basically. And these were very popular, but a gentleman to make punch would have that and a strainer to strain out the lemon seeds and a nutmeg grater, and that would be about it. You know, there's really not that much that you need.
Aren't some punches set on fire before they're served?
Especially in Germany. The Germans have a certain pyromania when it comes to drinks in bowls. And
Besides the dramatic effect, what's the benefit of setting a bowl of punch on fire?
Well, I think the main benefit is the dramatic effect, frankly. It burns off a little bit of the alcohol, but less than you would suspect, and it's just fun. You know, I made, actually on Saturday night, I made one of these German things where you put a loaf of sugar on a pair of fire tongs over a bowl of hot red wine, and you soak the sugar in rum and light it on fire. And
how long do you let it burn? Do you blow it out?
No, you keep ladling rum onto it until it's all dissolved, and the rum burns away, and the sugar all melts into the wine, and you might grate a little nutmeg, and you're done. It's quite delightful.
But you don't taste any burn flavor.
No, really.
Because you're burning
don't.
Sugar, in effect.
Well, you're really the sugar is melting. You're really burning the alcohol. That burns first.
Should we take a call?
Sure.
Colleen from New Jersey. Hi, Colleen. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling to share a secret that I love eggnog. My Polish grandmother used to come to stay with us, and on Christmas morning, she would wake up and make the eggnog for the afternoon dinner, and it was a great pleasure to all of us because we loved it, and we didn't find out until we were older that other people thought it was really vile. And as I went out into the world or brought friends into our home as we grew up, people made fun of us. And although my grandmother passed away a few years ago, she had made this well into her 80s. I have her recipe, and I have her original bowl in which she made this eggnog. I no longer make it because there's no one to consume it other than myself. I'm married with my own family. But I pine for this wonderful eggnog. She made it with cream and egg yolks and sugar, and it was so wonderful. But I have a hard time
finding that vial. That sounds delicious.
It is delicious, and we loved it, and we all shared this, and we waited. We watched her make it, and we waited every year for it. But other people thought it was so gross and made fun of us. And
We won't make fun of you.
Thank you.
You're right, and they're wrong.
We're going to sneak another call in here. Take many more later. But Matt from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. Great show. Fantastic information. I know that the American revolutionaries were big rum drinkers, and rum fermented the mm-hmm. American patriots in the revolution against the British. How did the American patriots deal with the British punch? Did they scoff at it? Did they look at it as a drink of the imperious ruling class?
They loved it. They drank it to excess. George Washington won his first election to the Virginia House of Burgesses by laying out huge amounts of punch for the electorate. Thomas Jefferson's father sold a large piece of land for the biggest bowl of arak punch at the local tavern. You know, it was part of their culture. That they had no problem with. Other parts of the British culture, maybe so, but the punch part, they definitely like.
So is that the way WNYC should run a successful fundraiser? We just lay out large amounts of punch for our listeners?
I don't think it's ever failed anybody to give free drinks for something.
Matt, thanks for calling us.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And we have to take a little break. We'll be back with more about punches and nogs and your experiences at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guest is David Wondrich, author of Imbibe. Also, an article about punch called With Glasses Raised, because there's always a toast.
There's always a toast. There should be, at least.
That's in the December issue of Saveur magazine. Stay with us for more. We're back with mixicologist and cocktail historian David Wondrich, author of Imbibe. That's a book. More recently, an article about punch called With Glasses Raised. That was in the December issue of Saveur magazine. And we have been soliciting calls. We're going to take a whole bunch of them, David.
Excellent.
Also, we've been getting all sorts of comments. Listen, David from New York City sent us his recipe for punch. It included a package of cherry gelatin as well as lemonade concentrate, ginger ale, and cranberry juice cocktail. Is gelatin commonly used in punches?
Not anymore, but that's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's one of those things. In the 19th century, there were actually lots of recipes for punch with gelatin in it. to add body. Actually, even in the 18th century, it adds body to it and smooths out the alcohol. But his sounds non-alcoholic, so it would just add a certain body to it, and it's not a bad idea.
Another listener, Tom from the Upper West Side, left a comment on our show page. He said, the best punch I ever made included strong tea.
Ah, that's a...
He said it gave it more punch.
Yeah, that's... it's a dangerous punch. I have made punches with tea. It goes. That's another 17th, 18th century thing. That's one you want to be very careful about drinking too much of, because otherwise you'll be intoxicated and up all night. It's like vodka and Red Bull in the 18th century style.
Because you have
caffeine.
Because they're at war with each other. You have the caffeine, mm-hmm. and then you have the alcohol, which is kind of a soporific.
It makes for a fun evening, but it also can, if overdone, make for a very annoying drunk.
Oh, I've met a few of those.
I think they do exist.
Andrea from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm calling with a really great recipe for eggnog that was passed to my parents in the 50s by some friends of theirs. It has a lot of booze in it, and we think that's partly what makes it special. But
it helps.
We make it 3 or 4 weeks before we want to drink it so that it has a chance to age.
That is that's something I've actually never attempted, but I've heard of it. It's a real... folk American way of doing it that...
But I want to ask about that. Milk can go sour, so...
Not with that much booze in it.
Oh, it keeps
yeah.
it from souring?
Yeah.
And the eggs don't go bad either.
It's alcohol is a preservative.
And isn't it a little rich? Some people don't like things
rich.
That are really
it's
rich.
Extraordinarily rich.
But some of those people who say they don't like things that are really rich will also gladly eat French vanilla ice cream until they're blue in the face. So
you can only drink a little bit of
yeah.
this. I mean, you can't drink 3 or 4 glasses of it. It's just one... And it's divine, but then you move on to something else.
Exactly. It's for a toast. It's
so now, since it has in the same ingredients as ice cream, could you just freeze it and have a kind of a nog ice cream?
Oh, God, that would be fantastic.
You certainly could, yeah. Let us know how it comes out.
Maybe tomorrow.
I think maybe I need to try that.
Yeah, put it in just one of those little Tupperwares and see what happens.
You'd have to cut down on the alcohol because that doesn't freeze. You'd end up with a slush.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, alcohol is an antifreeze.
Okay, but, all right.
No, I've accidentally put
it... I'll have to make a whole new batch.
Yeah, don't cut down on it too much.
Thank you for calling us. Now, David, I put a bottle of wine in the freezer and it froze.
Yeah, wine is pretty low proof, but once you bump up the proof to a certain point... The alcohol will not freeze, and I mean that's how they used to make Applejack in New Jersey back in the day. Is they would put kegs of apple cider outside and skim off the whatever didn't freeze, which supposedly gave you a hell of a headache. But nonetheless, it was simple enough.
Now, David, I've tasted this punch. In fact, as you can see, I've tasted quite a bit of the punch. I'm still sentient, so I guess it's okay. But it does have an odd taste, and is that the arak?
That's the arak, yes. It's a very sort of unusual, heady, slightly funky vegetal taste. But it's very pleasant, I find. You don't want to drink it straight necessarily, but
no, this is
punch,
definitely something to be sipped.
Yeah, originally the punch was the English, who were the masters and inventors of punch, like to fuel it with spirits that had a lot of flavor to them, because you were diluting them so much with lemon juice and water or tea and whatever. They wanted something that would stand up to the ingredients, so you could actually taste the alcohol in it, even though there wasn't that much in it.
We're taking another call. Steve from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a family recipe for a hot Swedish drink called Glögg.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is Glögg like a nog?
It's like a mulled wine.
Yeah, what's the difference? What is mulling? And well, what is muddling?
Well, muddling is when you mash things up. And mulling it is when you heat it up over low heat, I believe.
Yeah, this is port wine.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a little bag with cheesecloth. I'm putting cardamom seeds, cloves, cinnamon sticks, orange peel. And heat that slowly, then you add the rum and brown sugar and raisins also.
There doesn't sound like anything wrong with that. That sounds delicious.
And then you can use the raisins over ice cream afterwards.
That's great. Well, that sounds very traditional and very delightful.
Could you just put ice cream into a nog? Would that work?
You could, I suppose. I think it's they put so much stuff in ice cream these days. If it were a homemade ice cream, you could get away with it. But, you know, now there's all kinds of, again, carrageenan and other gums and guar gum and xanthan and all that kind of stuff that I don't really want in my eggnog if possible.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you.
Now, he has his is warm, so yeah. There are – how many of these drinks can be served warm?
Well, punch originally was served warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and they both work. However, when you make it warm, you want to cut down on the citrus because hot acid is a bit much. Often they would make punch with hot punch with just lemon peel and a lot of boiling water and Irish whiskey, something like that.
Michelle from Fanwood, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
This is a vote for eggnog. I used to make the classic eggnog until about the 70s, until we started to figure out that that many eggs and that much heavy cream probably wasn't a great idea. But when the lady called and said her friends thought it was vile, mine was very popular.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, it's one of those things. If you have it every day, it's a terrible idea. But if you have it on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or something, one or two glasses is not going to throw you off your diet or send you into a decline. You know, it always bothers me.
Said you could drink about one cup of it, and we had a cat that we had to keep away from it because he loved it.
That's some cat.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he was, and made a fool of himself.
Now, I read in Wikipedia that the word nog comes from noggin, a Middle English phrase used to describe a small wooden carved mug that was used to serve alcohol.
So it certainly...
That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know the exact... with the history of alcoholic drinks, you'll never get the exact story because... anybody who was there when a really good drink was invented is never going to remember it the next day. So it's one of those things. But that makes the most sense of all the theories I've heard.
Well, we have listed, in case you can't remember these things, we've posted some punch recipes and photos on our show page at WNYC.org from the article you wrote for the December issue of Savoir Magazine.
I think there were a couple extras, too, that I sent.
Yeah, one of the punches, Regent's Punch, calls for green tea. So you also had a tea thing there.
The Regent's Punch was the favorite punch of George IV, who was George III's son and Prince Regent when George III was crazy. The Regent was one of the great gluttons in history, and he loved to have punch made for him according to this recipe, and it was a total phenomenon. It's one of the fanciest, most expensive recipes I know, but it's absolutely delightful. So, you know, he might have been a bit of a pig, but he was not wrong when it came to these things. He knew his punch, that's for sure.
Another listener, Gustav, writes, being of German descent, we drink
Glühwein, yeah.
Oh, Glühwein for the holidays. Equal parts sherry and tawny port, a shot of whiskey, orange and lemon slices, and cinnamon sticks, all of which were heated up until the vapors could knock you over. I'm not sure if it tastes good, he said, but after a glass, one doesn't really care.
Yeah. Those vapors are also highly inflammable, and one of the things that they like to do with that in Germany is light them on fire and give your flaming bowl of punch there. It's great. It's very warming and delightful, but strong.
A listener named Chefess from Brooklyn writes, impromptu this past summer, I made a winter pinch with ingredients I had around. Tart cherry stomp, I think that was the name, from Red Jacket Orchards. I mixed it with triple sec and vodka, had them already in the fridge, champagne and seltzer, and everybody loved it.
Oh, sure. That sounds, you know, a very refreshing summer drink.
So is that what happens, that... you can invent any kind of punch you want? Just
you
simply stick a bunch of ingredients together?
You know, as a historicist, let's say, and a purist, I think often people put too much stuff in it, and the flavor gets kind of muddied. You know, I think the original recipes were very simple, and I'm a big fan of that, of just this simple five ingredients. Keep it straightforward. Let the ingredients speak for themselves.
But would you improvise?
You can certainly improvise once you know the formula. You know, it's I like to use one part lemon juice or lime juice to four parts spirits, one part sugar, and then 4 to 6 parts water, and you're done. And nutmeg. And it's very simple, and it really works well.
A Facebook friend wrote that on my wall, in fact, whatever that means, that he really enjoys iced coffee with Baileys. He's not sure that counts as a cocktail, but
well, it sounds
he says it's really tasty.
I'm sure it is. You know, that's that sounds delightful. So,
and in the Caribbean, they often have cream-based.
Yeah,
they'll use
condensed milk because they don't really have much of a dairy industry.
Coconut
there.
Cream.
Or coconut cream or coconut water. Those go very well. They even have a peanut punch is very popular, where you use the peanuts as a sort of creaming agent.
Another listener, Anna from Summit, New Jersey, left a comment on our show page. She said, I'm from Costa Rica, and I remember us having eggnog during Christmas since I was a child. They, I have since lost it. Oh, they didn't make it non-alcoholic back then. I think they still don't. So for kids, it was restricted.
Yeah.
And that is an issue. Kids are going to want to taste it, right?
Of course they are. You can, you know, one of my favorite eggnogs to make is a sherry eggnog, where instead of using brandy or bourbon or whatever, you use a rich sherry, like a, you could even use dry sack, something like that. And it leads to something quite low in proof, but still has that rich kind of Christmassy flavor to it. And that goes back to Jerry Thomas, the guy who wrote the first Bartender's Guide, has a couple of recipes for that.
We are now are joined by Sheila from Huntington. Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
So,
hello?
Yes,
hello?
You're on the air.
Hi, I love the show, and thank you very much. I'm calling about a punch that I made up. I call the Lovey. That's my husband's nickname for me. And everybody gets a big blast out of that. But anyway, what I do is I muddle spearmint leaves with vodka. Usually I'll use a citron vodka, and I add lime juice and cranberry juice to that. And I usually serve that in the summer, and people just love it. I don't know if it's original, but I call it my drink.
Well, it sounds, you know, that sounds very refreshing. And, you know, it's one of those, you're following kind of the original ways of making punch. You've got something sweet, you've got something sour, you've got something strong, you've got, I'm sure, ice in there. And then,
absolutely, yeah.
And then the mint is the spice, you know, that the structure of that, basically, if you want to look at it like that, the architecture of your drink goes back to the 1600s. So
all
it's
right,
kind of funny.
Thank you for calling us. Since punches have a lot of alcohol in them, are they as likely to cause a hangover?
They are extremely likely to cause a hangover.
So are there hangover punches?
No. That's what the cocktail was invented for. It was
was invented to get you past the punch?
Yeah, it was invented as a hangover drink, and the social drink of the age was punch. So the next morning you'd have the...
That doesn't work well, does it?
No, it's a terrible idea.
Well, maybe we should follow the Mexicans do menudo or something like that.
Well, they didn't have aspirin when it was invented or anything else, so... You know, you work with what's available. But
Barbara from Brooklyn, how you're on the air?
Yes, I'd like to know what's hot toddy.
Hot toddy is spirits, either Scotch whiskey or rum. Those are both traditional, or any kind of whiskey with some sugar and some hot water, and you can even grate some nutmeg on top, and you're done, or a piece of lemon peel. It's very simple. It's very warming.
So how many different drinks have we talked about so far?
We've gotten a couple dozen already, I think.
Because we start off with punches and nogs, and now we keep on adding to the mix.
I guess
people find any way they can to gussy up alcohol.
The people are ingenious, as you know.
Ezra from New York. I know somebody's going to accuse me of encouraging alcoholism, but we're not doing that. Saying if you have a problem with alcohol, you should not drink.
You should not drink.
And drink punch in moderation.
Drink with respect for what you're drinking. See, I like the drinks where you can actually taste the alcohol, like a good bowl of punch, because that way you know what you're doing. It's not sneaking up on you.
Like a whiskey sour.
Yeah, exactly.
So disguised with the sugar and everything, you can't tell what's going on.
If it's too disguised, you're not going to respect it, or an apple martini or something like that.
Ezra from New York, how you're on the air?
Yeah, hi. How you doing? My favorite holiday drink I actually learned in Eastern Nepal, and it's an eggnog-esque drink. It's basically just whipped egg yolks with a little bit of sugar and a little bit of brandy that you whip until it's frothy, like a zabaglione.
Mm-hmm.
I actually learned it from an Italian guy. And then you mix that with espresso and brandy. And
wow.
It's the most amazing, creamy, vegan. Well, not quite vegan.
Not lactose. Quite vegan.
No, it's
yeah.
lactose-free
yeah. Yeah.
eggnog. Amazing. Totally amazing.
That sounds great.
So that's a zabaglione, really.
Yeah, with coffee, though. That's a nice wrinkle on it.
Yeah, really simple and just really just absolutely delicious.
That sounds great.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you.
We move on now to Joel from Manhattan. Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask about Tom and Jerry, which as far as I can tell is kind of a cousin to eggnog, maybe a bit more frothy.
It is. Tom and Jerry is, it goes back to the 1830s. It's an American drink as far as we can tell. It was hugely popular. The minute the thermometer dropped below about 40, every bar in America would make a bowl of this batter that you make by whipping egg yolks and egg whites separately with a little spice and a lot of sugar. And then you would put the batter into a little shaving mug type thing and fill it up with hot water or hot milk and rum and brandy and serve it forth. And it's very warming. It's like a hot eggnog. And they still make it in the Midwest, which God bless them for that. It's still in the upper Midwest. Every winter, the Tom and Jerry Bowl comes out. And I just love to see that. It's
now,
such an old tradition.
Now, we're told not to eat raw eggs anymore. In fact, in a Caesar salad, we are told not to eat raw eggs. Are they okay in an eggnog?
Well, you're mixing in a hot eggnog, you're mixing them with hot water and lots of alcohol. And, you know, it's one of those things, if you use fresh eggs that are from a reputable producer and have not been sitting around forever, the odds are very slight that you'll get into any trouble. I'm not going to say unequivocally that it's always safe, but it's one of those things that we're told to do so many not to do so many things that our ancestors always did without trouble, that I kind of look at it like that there might be something wrong with that prohibition.
Meanwhile, we have posted, as I said earlier, some punch recipes and photos on our show page at WMIC.org that are from the article David Wondrich wrote for Sever magazine in the December issue. You might want to just get the magazine as well. But we're providing it for you. The article is called With Glasses Raised. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun.
My great pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
And I'm going to finish up this punch.
Excellent.
And see if I can survive the rest of the day.
Well, one glass you should be fine. These are tiny glasses. Six glasses, I would worry.
I do want to ask you one more thing. Now, we have a big lump of ice in this this bowl, and it's just done from some kind of a – you know, the kind of thing that Chinese restaurants put soup in.
Yeah, I used a takeout container.
But if we want something a little prettier, what should we do?
You can use a bundt cake pan, something like that, or, you know, those baking rings. You can use, just a square block, you can use a milk carton. There are various things. You have to be ingenious, basically.
And if you're a sculptor, you can sculpt something.
Exactly so.
Thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you.